Blog Talk Radio.
Coffee roaster and comes out handsome.
Ooh.
Careful, it's science.
Science was tricky.
Step two, perky percolator.
Say, how do you get the handsome from the bean?
Our world champion barista wrangles the handsomeness right out of the bean.
Wow, that's one hot brew. Want to wrangle me too?
Step three,
finally, the most important part. Serve it with a smile and slurp up the handsome.
Heavenly. It's the second coming of coffee. Wow, this coffee's so handsome, even I'm attracted to it.
Is it me or the coffee that's so hot?
It's definitely the coffee.
Ah, nuts.
No, beans.
I love flicking beans.
Every cup starts right here in glamorous, sunny Los Angeles, Hollywoodland, California. Handsome coffee. They've got beans and brawn. Aw, heck, let's just sing about it.
Put some hot, handsome coffee to your lips. Get better looking with every sip. Try the most attractive coffee we've ever seen. It's the handsome roasted coffee bean.
It's the handsome roasted coffee bean. Hello, handsome.
Handsome coffee. Coffee made handsome. Warning, may cause sudden effects of handsomeness and good-lookingness.
I just love that. Was the Apple Sisters. Very American. Okay, I'm going to open up his mic, and all the way from Paris, let's hope it's on.
Yes, I can hear
Craig,
you.
Craig, I've opened your mic. Oh, good.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Very well and very clearly.
Oh,
thank you.
Bonjour from
very
Paris.
Very good phone service. Bonjour. Hello from America. Terrific. I read your book yesterday. I loved it. Love, love, love.
Oh, wonderful.
It was so
Yay.
Good. I read it one sitting, to tell you the truth. I was like, no, what happens next?
good. A page turner, great.
And it was terrific. So we're going to give the people a little backstory. It's not just my misconception was it was a cookbook, though. There are some great recipes in the back. I can't wait to do that for you today. You got me so hungry.
Great.
That was just a journey. It was a story of your journey. And it's not just about the restaurant itself, but it's your journey to this place and how it you kind of were connected from early childhood. So I'm just going to back up so the audience gets to know you a little bit. So let's begin at the beginning. And I know you had a very tumultuous childhood, but let's do the French Connection part of it, okay?
Oh, yes, that's great. But yeah, there's so many. It was when I was writing the book and I was looking back and I wondered, how did I end up in France? I started connecting the dots, and there's so many wonderful things that brought me to France. You know, first, I grew up in a single-parent household in Connecticut in an area called Frenchtown. It was in this old end of town, rundown factory had shut down years earlier. But nobody could tell me why it was called Frenchtown. And, in fact, I went back to my hometown for a book signing, and there were some old-timers there. And they said, well, I imagine some French people must have lived there, but no one could tell me. But that was just kind of a very interesting start to my formative years. It took place in an area called Frenchtown, which I thought was wonderful. And then the language itself. I intended on taking Spanish because it was a pretty tough neighborhood, and my dad said, you know, you need to take Spanish, you know, not French. That's a useless language, you know. He wanted to understand what the neighbors were saying. And when I went to school to choose my language, the teacher came around and she said, okay, is it going to be French or Spanish for seventh grade, right? And I said, well, Spanish, of course. And just then two of the popular kids in class, Ann and Dan, chimed in and said, don't take Spanish. We're taking Spanish. And just like that, I said, all right. I know, exactly. Kids can be a little cruel, right? But if I ever see either of them, I'll thank them, because I just turned to the teacher and I said, all right, French then. And to think that little moment in my life brought me to where I am here today is just amazing to me. So
that's one of the – you had so many jobs as a child because of your unusual situation, and you really had to grow up very fast as well. And you're doing your dad's paper route, and you're tell us a little bit about all the jobs you had.
Yeah, I really essentially was on my own from 9 on. I know it's a little hard to believe, but I just from 9 on, I was pretty much a latchkey kid. My dad wasn't around very much. And I started off doing a paper route. Then I did two of them, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And then I did, I don't know if you remember, if any listeners remember the gas lines back in the 1970s. When there was, you know, I would sell cola in the gas lines on my bicycle in the hot summer night days. And then from there, like you said, I worked on my dad's paper route. He was the guy that dropped off the papers for the paper boys like me. And so I just did anything I could. I shoveled snow in the winter. I worked as a dishwasher under the table in a restaurant when I was 14. I did many different things. So all survival, great survival skills, and it really taught me to think as an entrepreneur a bit, you know, how to get by with very little. And which really became valuable later on when I opened the restaurant.
Well, yes, but also that too. I mean, you went on and then you put yourself through college. And even there, it's just you kept getting blindsided by life's little obstacles, getting you didn't know you were a dependent living on your own. And you had to go backwards and try to, what? I'm a dependent? Wait a minute, but I'm on my own.
Yeah, exactly. I would joke with people. I was like, okay, it's one thing when your family doesn't help you at all, which is okay, that's one thing. But then when they actually get in your way and make it more difficult, that's a totally different thing. And that's what happened. My dad declared me as a dependent. And I had to leave the house when I was 16. And he moved to another state and claimed me as a dependent. And I had out-of-state tuition all of a sudden. And there was no way I could pay for that. But I was able to make that work. So it was one thing after another.
Yeah, you
like
made
you said.
That work. And then that led you towards the entertainment, or your Disney years, as you call them, the cast of Disney. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, that was very interesting because I had gotten the when I after I had the idea for the restaurant, I needed to raise some money. Is that the period you mean, when I ended up working at Disney?
Yes, yes. That was so
yes.
funny to me. The way you described
it. Oh, yes,
it,
because...
Okay.
Yeah, because I started off as a temp, and a lot of people in L.A., actors, writers, director wannabes like myself, end up temping, and I ended up working at Disney, and eventually they wanted to hire me as a permanent person, which they called a cast member. And I just didn't want to do that because I wanted to do my restaurant, but I was trying to raise money for it. I didn't want to get stuck because there was a man there, Manny, who had been
that,
there 20.
I love that story, but because also I know when they recruit kids to go work and like just work the concession stands, but you're working for a Fortune 500 company.
Yes, exactly. Yes, they have this orientation day where you just watch this video where they show you how Disney is pretty much exactly that, how widespread the whole empire is. And, and as a cast member, you're supposed to, and exactly. And of course, and then in the book I mentioned, they ask you who your favorite Disney, animation character is as well, And that was just so funny because, I had to think of something quick. That's what I told them.
With?
I said, there's just too many to choose, and they love that answer, because I'm on honestly, because it probably comes from my upbringing. I wasn't really much of a corporate guy, That's probably why I'm an entrepreneur now. I really didn't like that kind of work, so I just wanted to be a little more free thinking.
So tell us about kind of the miracle of events to do with Disney. Came about, your dreams.
Yes, because the biggest irony is I didn't want to become a cast member, and I did. And a few months later, Disney did, for the first time in its history, a huge corporate downsizing of 4,000 employees. But they did it in a special way. They basically decided they weren't going to choose who they were going to lay off. They wanted people to volunteer to leave. And if they volunteered to leave, they would get a nice bonus. And that bonus happened to be exactly the amount of money I needed to start my company. So I was more than happy to volunteer, where everyone else was very sad, of course, because they didn't know.
And you kept getting signs along the way. That's what I found so interesting in your book. I'm not going to give away too much because I got to go buy Pancakes in Paris, please. And
yes.
By Craig Carlson. but you had a lot of signs. Now, was your grandmother French? I'm trying to think. Where was the French connection there?
That was the funny thing. No one in my family was French. My grandmother on one side was Polish on my mom's side, and the other side was Finnish on my dad's side. And so that's why even now today I will never ever pass as a French person. I just do not look it.
I heard a little Canadian in there, I think, somewhere. I caught a little sound, but yes, your English is very good for living in France, and it's very good.
Yeah, right.
So I love it. Okay, it's pretty good. And I love that you just, I got such a sense of you, Craig, reading the book. I felt it was very honest, and that you were just, this is what happened to me, kind of thing. It could happen to anybody who's ever, I lived in Rome or lived in any other country, but you had such a good attitude. And I would call it a survivor attitude because I'm not giving it away, but what you went through in France, not the bad people, but just trying to, I really think this book is about, overcoming obstacles, pursuing your dreams, and winning, which you did.
Yes, perseverance, persevering.
We won't give anything away by telling them the germ of when the light bulb went off for the restaurant.
Oh, I love it. You want me? Yeah, I love that story. I had been working, because originally I was in Hollywood working in film and TV, and just through another, again, series of events, I ended up on a TV show in France, a co-production with France and America. And I did that for a couple of seasons, and I really wanted to live in Paris, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was kind of through with Hollywood. And then when the show was over, I went back to L.A., and my friends took me to a diner downtown. And I was craving a breakfast so much. And so I ordered scrambled eggs, ham steak, home fries, buckwheat pancakes, this huge breakfast feast. And the minute it came to my table, I just stared at it and said, oh, my God, this is the one thing I missed in Paris. And just like that, the idea came to me. Oh, my God, the one thing I missed in Paris. Because I love croissants. I love pain au chocolat. But if anyone's been to Paris, after a few days, maybe a week, you really start craving a breakfast, A croissant and pain au chocolat are not enough. And so I just stared at it and I said, this is what I'm going to do in Paris.
There's something about we are real power food Americans, but mostly because
yes.
we're from somewhere else. But we're real power food. If you think about it, Craig, everything on your plate was from a different country.
That's
your
a good point, yes.
originated some, yes, right? Your sausages, another place. Your hash browns, another culture. I'm guessing Scandinavian, I think, used to fry their potatoes like that. Right, with mashed up and shredded. So
yeah, like galettes, they call them here. They call them galettes. Yeah, yeah.
So even I'm thinking, what is my favorite? A corned beef hash, which I'm thinking
that's impossible to get here. Yeah.
Yes, I love corned beef hash, but that's my comfort with an egg on top. That's my comfort.
Mm.
And it's just so delicious. But the way you describe it, okay, so you've got the idea, that's what I'm going to do. And I love that. And then your next step, then without giving it away, we'll jump ahead a little because I want people to get the book, okay?
Yeah.
And also, I just switched a thing. The website again is?
It's pancakesinparis.com.
Pancakesinparis.com. And your book's available on the Internet as well. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, but Amazon and Barnes & Noble as well. Yeah.
And speaking of it, congratulations on today. I heard you had a very successful book signing.
Yes. I imagine you have a lot of Francophiles out there. And if you've been to Paris, you might have heard of Shakespeare and Company. And Shakespeare and Company has been around forever. It's been since, I think, right after the war. And it was just, it has so much history to it. In fact, they just came out with a wonderful book chronicalizing the whole entire history of Shakespeare and Company. And so we had a signing
this
morning.
Well, we have one in Manhattan, I believe. Yes.
You do. And I actually did a book signing there, but they're not by the same owner, coincidentally. And I actually made three kinds of pancakes this morning that I served at the signing. We made our buttermilk, which we serve in the restaurant. We made 7-grain, and we also made gluten-free, because gluten-free is becoming more and more popular here, as it is everywhere. And I have to say, the gluten-free did not go. Sorry?
It really, because I could just imagine, it's not flour and butter, it's not edible, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, at the end, that was all that was left, was the gluten-free. Nobody, barely anyone touched them.
No flour, no butter. I'm not eating that.
Yeah, what's the point? Yes, exactly.
What is the point?
Mm-hmm.
And I know too. With you, you and me have a butter passion.
Oh.
About butter. So tell me a little bit about that, because.
Oh yes, because growing up with my dad, food was just sustenance, and I had never really had real butter until I came to Paris. Believe it or not, when I studied abroad, a junior year abroad. And my dad used to get, like, seriously, generic bread spread from the section of the store where everything was. Remember when back then it was all just white? There was nothing on the, no color and anything on the generic food.
God.
And I completely forgot about it until I was writing the book. And I was like, oh, my God, I remembered that. And then when I got to Paris and had my first real butter, I was just, oh. And now, of course, that's.
Once you have real butter, you can't go back. Butter. I was like, I had it for the first time, I think. I had things called butter, but I never had that grass-fed, really, almost like cheese consistency butter. And I was like, now I taste the chemicals. I can't even, I always go, that's not margarine, is it?
That's not
butter.
Absolutely. And here, it's everywhere. You go in any cafe and just get the best butter. And so,
less of it, right? Use less because it's so flavorful. Use less than you would of the American butter.
That's true. You're right. I remember spreading that spread real thick on my English muffin, So, absolutely.
The salt taste in there. And
it was
so good. Okay, so now, people, I'm not going to give it away. You just got to go to www.pancakesinparis.com. and get the books, because the trials and tribulations that then followed this poor man. What I thought about in your story, what it related to me, because I don't want to give it away. I want them to get the book because I love it so much. I was the way you were raising money. I kept thinking, this is like every movie I've ever seen where they're producing a movie.
Yes, right. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. Yeah, any small business venture, you know. Sorry?
They made you jump through so many hoops. It was just like, I felt like, I was like, oh, man, what next? And then
it reminded me a little of the Wizard of Oz, you know. Get us the broom, the witch's broom, you know. You have to go through the whole journey, and you get it, and then it's just still not enough, you know. Sorry?
And actually, the book was quite humorous because you weren't being putting down anybody or anything in it, but I like when you were dealing with the bureaucracy, and every time you say, well, how long will that take? And then they would go, soon. And you go, well, when is soon? Soon is when it's soon. And it was just like,
yeah, yeah, exactly, yes. Never get a straight answer. Never. Yeah.
And,
I call it living in the gray.
Living in the gray.
Yeah. There's no black and white here in Paris, and you have to get used to it. You have to get used to no definitive answers. Everything, c'est pas possible, which, of course, it is possible, but you have to make them, you know, convince them that it's actually possible, and then things move.
You were amazing what they put you through, and just I think we can tell this little snippet of the story because they'll read the book and see more involved. But I love, too, the part of you and the owners, the couple.
Oh, the Morans? The Morans?
Yes, please tell
That's my favorite part, honestly. If I were to ask me my personal part that touches me the most, it's that part. Because in a way, what would you like me to say about them?
Just say you found this little place and...
Yes. Yes, I found this little place, and it was this couple that were going to retire after over 35 years running this cafe. But Madame, who was the tough one of the two, she was the one trying to gently push her husband out the door to retire. But they had never had any children, and so this was his baby. His cafe was his baby. And so when I went to go see it, I had to be very discreet, not let them, you know, the agents, the real estate agent said not to let them know that I was coming to look at the place. And eventually when I did meet them and we did negotiate, I found out that they had been getting offers every week. People walking in there, it's a great location, it's a great space, but they had chosen me. And I asked them why. And Madame said, because Monsieur Marat found you nice, first. And number two, that the diner captured more the spirit of his old bistro, you know, because it was, I'm doing a kind of a vintage diner. And up until then, his offers were fast food, takeout, you know, hero stand or takeout Chinese. But a diner actually fit his spirit. So he felt like, oh, that his little baby would continue on, you know, a little bit more in the same spirit as him. And at one point I realized that I was like the son they never had, you know. They had never had any children. And so now they still live above the restaurant. And I see them regularly, you know. And Madame will come. Now she's in her 80s. She's a bit frail. She'll come to the window, and she'll wave to me. And it's just so sweet. They're such a sweet couple. So.
Oh, and also I like that she was very smart because he was wavering on whether you were going to get the restaurant. And what did she tell him to do? Go make you? To go make you
croque monsieur. The croque monsieur. Right?
And the way you said that, they just popped off the page because I see the little guy going into the kitchen to make his special sandwich and so happy he's cooking.
Yeah, and that was the last one he made before he retired, you know. And so I got to have his last croque monsieur because Madame was so proud of him. She would say that he has the best croque monsieur in all of Paris, you know. And I got to have his last one before he retired. That part kind of makes me tear up every time.
It does, and it was so nurturing. It was just such a nurturing thing that he was like, that was his official giving it to you because he was giving you the food of his passion and his restaurant, and it was so nice. I love that story. Anyway, that's one of the many stories you'll find in there. And you're in Barnes & Noble and Amazon, too, www.pancakesinparis.com. And it's such a great read. Now, tell us about some of the French things that really don't – phrases you use in the book that don't translate into English.
Oh, really? What's interesting is last night. If you think of any offhand, but I can tell you last night, I just did a Skype with the university in Canada in Ontario, their French department, because their assignment was to translate the student's assignment was to translate some chapters into French from my book, and they had so many questions. For example, how do we translate à la mode into French, into the French version of the book, because à la mode in French means fashionable or stylish. It doesn't mean, you know, apple pie à la mode, right?
And no, so, it actually means of the moment or of the model or something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What's fashionable at that moment or what's popular at that moment, right?
At that moment. It doesn't mean ice cream on top of cake.
Exactly, not at all. And so they said to me, "What? How do we translate it into French?" Because the joke was there, right? And so there was those kinds of things.
How about sock
and,
juice?
Sock juice is my favorite. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Because I didn't realize until I came to France that the French call American coffee sock juice. It's called jus de chaussette.
Sock juice.
And
well,
so it gives you an idea.
Coffee at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. So it gives you an idea of what they think of our coffee, right? And so that was a real challenge when I started, because doing an American breakfast joint, what's more important, you know, with your pancakes than a bottomless mug of Joe? You know, you have to have that. And so, but I even have it on my menu. Breakfast in America is the name of my restaurant. It's actually on the menu, jus de chaussette as the translation to American coffee.
Oh, wow.
Every day I get a laugh from a French customer. They'll read that and they'll laugh, and I'll go, "You want one? No, no, get me a real coffee," they'll say.
Greg, I have to say, you have been my favorite interview this year. You win favorite interview
really?
This year.
Oh,
can you believe it?
You.
We're down to the last 3 minutes. That's how great your interview has been. That's amazing.
That went so fast.
Anything you want to add? I know, but we're going to get together if you ever come back here to New York. Okay.
Absolutely,
we'll
absolutely.
We'll make so last 3 minutes, what would you like to add?
Oh, boy.
I want to say it has a happy ending, people. And actually, there is a love story, but I'm not giving it away. You have to read the book.
Yes, and the thing, the love story is integral to the rest of the story. Yeah, the love story is integral to the rest of the actual story of the restaurant, because it actually all comes together, but I don't want to ruin that. But
no, we're not
giving
it away. They got to go to www.pancakesinparis, Barnes & Noble, or Amazon to find you or connect with you. But this radio show will stay online. So this stays online.
Yes,
so anyone who missed it, Craig, they can download it for free on iTunes, and it stays online, and you can embed it, whatever you want to do. But 2 minutes, Craig, what do you want to say?
Yes,
to
what I'm most excited about the book is, as the people say, how inspiring it is for them. And the book only just came out last month, but I'm getting so many emails saying, you know, I no longer have an excuse not to pursue my dream. You know, if you could go through all that and make it happen, considering where you came from, you know, I have no excuse. I have to move forward. And I think that's just been so rewarding to me.
It is a book of inspiration. It's truly an inspiring book. And if you're going through if you're going through a little rough patch right now, pick up this book, read it at breakfast in a diner. You're going to feel
better. That's a perfect setting.
And it's got a couple of his recipes he threw in there. And I know you've been getting a lot of your political burgers going on, the vote for palate thing going on. So that, wish you much success. That burger's, I'm going to make it. I'm actually out near my barbecue, and I'm getting the recipe today to run to the store.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, great, great, great. Our signature burger. That'll
so
be
I
great.
So I want to make it.
You have to let me know how it turns out. Or some pictures, please, because we'd love to see it.
Okay. So anything else, Craig? You got 1 minute.
So I just think, if you do come to Paris, please come to see me. Another rewarding part of this whole tour has been, I did a 5-week tour in the States, and I gave out little coupon vouchers to have free pancakes if they came to Paris, because I wanted to really give people an incentive to come over here. I've already had 5 people come into the diner holding the voucher. I made it to Paris. Isn't that wonderful?
What we won't do for a coupon. That's American. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guest, Craig Carlson, a terrific guest. Pancakes in Paris, I loved it. I read it in one sitting because I couldn't put it down. It was so touching and terrific and inspiring. Remember, it's about overcoming obstacles, pursuing your dreams, and winning, people. That's what it's about. Get the book. Thank you, Craig, for being on our show today.
Oh,
wonderful
such
guest.
A pleasure.
My favorite.
Thank you so much. Thank you.